Good afternoon, everybody. And that was a great talk. I also live in Chicago, so I'm very interested in health inequalities in that city. And I was born in Argentina, so I want to tell you about health inequalities in that country now. My co-author in this paper is Bruno Linetsky, the Ministry of Health in Buenos Aires. And no financial disclosure. So this is a part of a project that we've been working on since about 2008. Roughly speaking, our work tries to unpack epidemiologic transition theory, trying to identify the aspects of inequalities that are often glossed over by Amran's model. So we've done quite a bit of work now on changes in social gradients. We had a paper in population health metrics a few years ago, and now a paper, I think 2 issues ago, in the International Journal of Public Health that looked at changing gradients in physical inactivity, obesity, and diabetes. Just as we have in this country, these risk factors are getting worse, and the gradients underneath them are also changing, so they're steepening. Physical inactivity increasingly a problem for low education women. We've also done some work with preventive cancer screenings and how they're changing. There's a paper on that coming out in Public Health, and a paper on tobacco consumption that we're still working on. Moving closer to the topic of this presentation on Richard Wilkinson's income inequality hypothesis, we had a paper on area-level poverty as a determinant of tobacco consumption among youth using the Global Youth Tobacco Survey. And then really 2 papers that tried to track along Wilkinson's line. An ecological analysis of the health effects of income inequality that came out this year in Global Public Health, where we tried to test the robustness of the hypothesis to different operational definitions of income distribution, going beyond the traditional Gini coefficient and incorporating what's called the generalized entropy index, which lets us vary the sensitivity of our index to different kinds of inequalities, different aspects of the income spectrum. So I want to tell you a little bit about that paper, because it leads directly to our multi-level analyses, where we're trying to extend Wilkinson in yet a different way by looking at education-based measures of inequality rather than relying on income-based measures. As you might imagine, in countries like Argentina, very high inequality, crisis-prone, survey-based measures of income are really hard. This is not like the British Household Panel Survey, where interviewees are asked for their payslips to verify the accuracy of their household income reporting. So there's lots of underreporting of income among the rich who don't want to report their income, and there's also all kinds of underreporting of income among the poor who are earning income in the black market. So we want to go beyond Wilkinson by looking at education-based measures of inequality. There's a variety of different ways of looking at Wilkinson's hypothesis. The one that I find most convincing is this graph here, where we have downward sloping lines representing the social gradient in health. Of course, the steepness of the lines will vary from place to place, circumstance to circumstance, and some would say that it's not a straight line, but it's curvilinear. But regardless, as household income increases, the probability of being in poor or fair health will decrease. Wilkinson's hypothesis asserts that there's a pathogenic effect associated with living in an area of high inequality. So I may make X1 amount of income, my probability of being in poor health will be Y1 if I live in an equal area, it will increase to Y2 if I live in an unequal area. So that gap, that difference between Y1 and Y2 would be that pathogenic effect of inequality. These lines, of course, don't need to be parallel. Inequality may adversely affect the health of the poor more than the rich. For me, the most striking empirical support for that hypothesis comes from an older study published by Nancy Ross et al. In the British Medical Journal back in 2000. Along the x-axis here, you have median share of income, one of the key operational definitions of income inequality, the proportion of income in that place that goes to the poorest 50% of people. And on the y-axis, you have a mortality rate for working-age people per 100,000 per year. The pattern was strongest for the United States, right? In a hypothetical 1% increase of income that goes to the poorest 50% was associated with a drop of 21 deaths per 100,000. The effect wasn't significant at all within the Canadian data, beginning to suggest that the health effects of income inequality are not universal. They will vary from place to place, country to country, welfare regime to welfare regime. Building on that style of work, we want to really explore 3 interrelated questions. Does the Wilkinson hypothesis apply to countries of the global south, to high inequality countries of Latin America? We believe there's lots of convincing empirical support for that. Significant studies have been published in Brazil, in Chile, and we've done some stuff in Argentina already. suggesting that Wilkinson's theory does indeed apply to countries of Latin America. He himself didn't think so, right? He wrote Unhealthy Societies and the Impact of Inequality, primarily interested in the OECD countries. So on that level, I disagree with him. We're also exploring how robust the hypothesis is. If you're familiar with this literature, you might have a sense that there's been more than 200 empirical studies on this hypothesis. About 90% of them find some support for the hypothesis, but once control variables are introduced, that figure drops to about 40%. There's a lot of disagreement about the validity of the hypothesis. In this sense, our work follows Dunn et al., who argue that instead of dismissing the income inequality hypothesis, because it does not appear to hold true in all cases under all conditions, research should focus on the particular question of under what conditions does the relationship hold. And thirdly, extending the hypothesis, we want to see if there are viable alternatives on the independent variable side of the equation. There's lots of work on the dependent variable side and some contradictory findings with studies of morbidity and mortality, but very little has been done on the independent variable side, extending from income-based to education-based measures of inequality. Okay, so some of the preliminary ecological findings. This is from the Global Public Health paper earlier this year. Here we find support for Wilkinson's hypothesis, looking at provincial-level data from the National Risk Factor Survey in 2005. We find a significant positive correlation between provincial-level Gini coefficients and the percentage of people in that place in poor or fair health. Most interestingly for us, we found that this relationship really varies in important ways when we change from the Gini coefficient, which you may know as a quantification of the Lorentz curve, right? So depicted here as size of area A. As that area diminishes in size, the Gini coefficient approaches zero. But there's all kinds of problems with the Gini coefficient that we gloss over sometimes. And in particular, the Gini coefficient is incapable of differentiating different kinds of inequalities. If you can imagine drawing Lorentz curves for the 24 provinces in Argentina, those Lorentz curves may intersect, but they reduce, they quantify to the same Gini coefficient. And indeed, the Gini coefficient is most sensitive to inequalities in the middle part of the income spectrum. Economists have developed alternative measures of income distribution that aren't used as often in public health, and I think they probably should be. There's the Atkinson index, and in this case, the GE index, the generalized entropy. What's interesting about these scales is that they incorporate a sensitivity parameter. For the GE, it ranges from -1 to 2. The more positive that value, the more sensitive the index is to inequalities at the top of the income spectrum. So transferring income from the 90th to the 99th percentile will have a stronger effect on our index. And this is what we see at the ecological level, focusing primarily in the red box. The correlation we saw before between poor health in 2005 and income distribution measured by the Gini coefficient in 2005 was 0.58. Notice what happens with the correlations with the generalized entropy index. As the sensitivity parameter increases, as we become more and more sensitive to inequalities at the top of the income spectrum, our link with population health increases. So we have the highest correlation with GE2, the generalized entropy index sensitive to inequalities at the top of the spectrum. If we introduce the lag effect and look at health outcomes in 2009, when we had our second national risk factor survey, we find the same pattern at a generally lower level of correlation and lower level of significance. So building on that work, we wanted to further extend Wilkinson by considering alternative measures of inequality. And this is where we go from an ecological correlation analysis to a logistic multilevel model. Our main data set is the 2005 National Risk Factor Survey, really the first time Argentina had really good nationally representative data on chronic diseases. Here we're using our self-rated health questions. And we matched that survey with the 2001 census, allowing us to increase the number of ecological units, going from 24 provinces to 165. They're called departments in Argentina, a sub-provincial level of geography. Doing so enabled us to generate these alternative measures of inequality. Indeed, they're now based on years of schooling rather than based on income. For now, we're just using the Gini coefficient, but as we saw in the previous slide, there may be grounds to incorporate the GE index as well. The dependent variable is self-rated poor health. 26.8% of our sample, a nationally representative sample, reported being in poor fair health versus good, very good, and excellent. The level one model is fairly thin right now. This is kind of a preliminary sketch of the model. We're going to develop that in the coming weeks. Sex, age, educational attainment broken into three groups. Primary school incomplete, almost 12% of the sample. Primary school completed or high school incomplete, further 40%. And secondary school completed or more, 46%. As we develop the model, we'll also look for further nuance in our education grading. And following the recommendation of Argentina's National Statistics Agency, we looked at income also in three groups, low, medium, and high, the four bottom deciles, the next four, and the upper two. Most interesting, though, we introduced level two variables of educational inequality. Again, these are Gini values based on years of education. And we found it interesting that the range of these values, a minimum of 0.23 and a maximum of 0.51, kind of mirrors what we see in international studies of Gini coefficients based on income. And these are within the country, an average Gini of education of 0.36. We also controlled for the mean years of schooling in that department to further add to the robustness of the results. Okay, so in Model 1, we test for and we determine that there is indeed a clustering of data at Level 2 with a significant Level 2 variance. Model 2, we introduce sex, age, and education, producing our first gradient, Level 1 gradient. Model 3, we introduce income. The education gradient, of course, diminishes as income and education will fight for explanatory power. And all of those results are fairly in line with what we've seen before and what we see in other countries as well, where low-income and low-education respondents are most likely to report being in poor health. Model 4 and Model 5 are where the results get more interesting, also harder to read. So in the next slide, I'm going to focus on the red box. The level 1 stuff didn't change very much. The income gradient and the education gradient stayed very, very stable throughout the models. But I want to show you what happened for the level 2 predictors in Model 4 and Model 5. In Model 4, we introduced that Gini of education variable, and we also see a significant gradient-like pattern there. So remember, this is controlling for sex, age, your household income, and your own educational attainment. We're beginning to see that there's something about how years of education, this public good, how that's distributed in your area may also have an effect on your likelihood to report being in poor health. If you live in a region where education is highly unequally distributed, if you're in quartile 4, you're 1.48 times more likely to self-report being in poor health. The Gini of education was negatively correlated with average years of schooling. So it was important to control for mean years of schooling as well in Model 5. And there it doesn't do much at all. And this is that main interplay that Wilkinson has always been playing around with, the relative importance of inequality versus overall wealth. And here we're finding that inequality based on years of education is winning out over years of schooling on average. So again, running through the interpretation, Model 1 showed us that there's a significant clustering by department. Model 2 introduced a significant gradient by education. In Model 3, where we added income, that education gradient diminished, but both point in the same direction and in expected sizes. Model 4, adding level 2 inequality, had a gradient effect in the Gini of education variable as well, and the level 1 gradient stayed robust. And Model 5, adding average years of education for that department, didn't change that inequality effect. So we think there's a couple lines of discussion and that these results may lead us to. That education-based measures of area inequality may be viable alternative to income-based measures, and this may be particularly important in crisis-prone economies like Argentina's, where income-based measures just are not as reliable. Household income in these countries also fluctuates widely from year to year, generating further methodological noise. We think that education-based measures may be more stable. Thirdly, we think these results add further support to the idea that the Wilkinson hypothesis applies to countries of the global south, which are largely post-EPI transition, population health is largely driven by non-communicable diseases, yet experience a far higher level of inequality than the countries that Wilkinson studied. If you remember in Unhealthy Societies, his big 1996 book, he suggested that this hypothesis applies to countries of the OECD because those were the countries that had undergone epi-transition. Since that book, there's an increased recognition that these are the leading causes of death in all areas of the world except for sub-Saharan Africa. Lastly, I think this kind of analysis, this framing of inequality as a social determinant of health, dovetails nicely with the so-called left turn in Latin American politics, where I think really for the first time in a long time, questions of income inequality, what Paul Farmer calls structural violence and social justice, can find a more prominent place in public health debates. I think it's a testament to the Ministry of Health that they're letting me do this kind of stuff at their office. So next steps, we have a whole lot of stuff to do, further refinements of the models, and specifically looking for cross-level interactions. So that's it. I'd welcome any suggestions, any comments you might have.